Cheers, Chris. My name's Dan. I'm an addict. And I am actually from Hartford, not one of these borrowed ones from Manchester. And I can't believe he stitched me up telling me what I'm supposed to share about. But I'll just crack. It's nice to be on this meeting. I have to be honest, right from the start, I've really avoided Zoom meetings during this whole COVID situation. I've had fellowship around me and I've kind of done certain stuff. And recently our local meetings have gone back to being physical, which I've done a few of, but tried really hard to avoid Zoom from a meeting point of view. But here I am, and here to kind of try and share a little bit about my experience, strength and hope, I suppose. I'll start with the Central District, because it's a real privilege to be asked by Central District. Whenever I've been asked by Central District to share, it's a real privilege because it's my area, it's where I come from. I was born and bred in Hartford. I was drinking in a pub. My first meeting was about 100 yards from one of the pubs. Was one of the last pubs I drank in. So it's like, and I've always lived in the town centre, a few miles, all just dotted around in the town. And my first meeting was in Hartford. And so being part of Central District is something I'm quite proud of. And I do think we've got something good going on. And it's not just because I say it or Tom says it or Chris says it or anyone else says it. It is actually because of people outside of our area say it. You know, that's what kind of really resonates with me whenever people, you know, for people who are outside Central, one of those events that really does that for us is Campvention, you know, and it's such a great experience. And if you've never been in Campvention, you should really try and get to it once you can, once again. So, and I just think about this time of year, you know, and... Now, this was the time of year that I was negotiating the heaviest with my illness in active addiction. So it's kind of like I would be getting to this time of year and it'd be like I made promises to either family members or situations that I'd said I was going to get into. And I would either, one or two things would happen, but certainly in the last 3 or 4 years of my using drugs, I would either go cold turkey, like just really try really hard to kind of just so that my mum would kind of not have to worry or to... Because I did used to cause a lot of carnage, and I'd either do that or I'd just go on a missing list. But it was a time when I can remember vividly always really trying to negotiate with this illness around this time of year. So I'd be kind of saying to myself, right, just like Christmas Eve, just go to the pub for an hour, make sure you get indoors, you've got a couple of presents you need to wrap, or go and see this person, you know, and I'd kind of, you know, I'd kind of like, yeah, I'd do negotiations and kind of say, well, we'll get through Boxing Day and then you can like kind of disappear for a few days or, you know, and sometimes it works and sometimes it don't, but it just didn't. But just sometimes it just reminds me of that and reminds me heavily of that of my using. I said, like Tom, I've been coming here. I've been sober now 21 and a half years and, it's funny. I remember Tom. So my first meeting, as I say, I remember my mum had to take me because I was just so frightened. I didn't really know what was going on. I didn't really understand it. And you know, all I can describe myself as just lost. You know, there was a load of kind of carnage and destruction behind me. But really, I was just a lost little boy. I was only 24 years old. You know, and you know, and drinking was a big part of my using. You know, as I already said, you know, I grew up in Leafy, Hertfordshire. You can only really score on Thursdays, Fridays and Saturdays. The rest of the time, it was like, fuck it. You know what I mean? It was like a ghost town. So, you know, drinking was a big part of my using. And I was just battered. I just came in really, I was battered. You know, I was really lost, really didn't feel connected to the world. You know, real kind of... just broken, man. Just broken and lost. And a friend of mine, who's now a friend of mine's mum, she was my counsellor. I've been to get some therapy. She said, oh, you should go to this meeting. My son goes. And it was a Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And I remember going and kind of just like a similar experience to lots of people. You know, the woman doing the chair was obviously talking about me and kind of like I thought they'd all ganged up on me and I was really paranoid. And I remember going downstairs and kind of like ending up in tears. And it was Tom, you know, who gave me my first man hug, if you like, my first experience of a 12-step hug, you know, someone telling me, yeah, mate, come here, it's going to be all right. And he at the time was like, I think about 3 or 4 or 5 months sober, clean. And, and I didn't stay sober straight away. You know, it took me about 6 months, and eventually I kind of gave in. And I remember having, similar to Tom, our using is very different. So, I remember ending up in a mental hospital on 15-minute observations, not being able to have a bath on my own, just, you know, someone having to stand in the corner room while, you know, while I wash myself. Do you know what I mean? And just like a real pathetic attempt at my own life, and kind of, you know, just, you know, really looking back, a bit comical, but it's not funny. But, you know, it certainly weren't funny for my mum, let's put it that way. You know, but, you know, I look back at it I was lucky enough, really. I was lucky enough to get given treatment. And it was only for, I think it was about 4 months in the end, that I went to a treatment centre for in central London. And it was an amazing experience. He wrapped me up in cotton wool and gave me what I needed just for that time, you know, for that period. But I was desperate. I was ready. You know, you tell me to stand in the corner of the room in a bucket of shit, it will keep you sober. That's what I would have done. You know, there was no question that I would do whatever you asked me to do. You know, I wanted this. I wanted it desperately. What I could kind of make out of what was in front of me was far better than what I was looking at behind, you know, over my shoulder. You know, I just didn't want that kind of like that. I just wanted that feeling of lost and of kind of feeling of degradation and despair and an inability. You know, I was frightened of everything, dogs, cats, buses, cars, you know, everything you could think of, I was frightened of. You know, I didn't know how to kind of communicate properly, loads of broken relationships, all that. So I just didn't want that anymore. Do you know what I mean? I knew life could give me more. And so I was lucky to get treatment. And I remember coming out of treatment on the day I was due to come out of treatment. And, yeah, just still not at all equipped, but with enough about me to kind of just know that, like, if I wanted to stay clean, I needed to get around like-minded people. And I'd already obviously been to a sprinkling of meetings, so I came back to Hartford and just got stuck right into fellowship. And brilliant times, man. When I look back, really fond times. I look back really fondly. You know, I was mad as a box of frogs, absolutely mental. We were all proper mental, but it was just brilliant, you know, and it was really hardcore fellowship, lots of like working steps. It wasn't in Cocaine Anonymous, but it was good fellowship, and lots of those people are still around, which I'm really proud of. You know, there's probably out of that sort of core 8 or 9 of us, 10 of us that were going to the regular meetings back then, there's still like 8 of us still sober and still kind of, they've gone off doing their own things. Some of them come to CA, some of them don't. Some of, you know, it doesn't really matter. You know, I don't really care. But it's just lovely that kind of core of people are still around. And it was about 3 years in. I was about 3 years sober, and I just wanted to use, really, if the honest answer is true. And do you know what it was? There was no, you know, there was kind of, it was just. For me, I can only talk for myself, is I was really aware that, like, nothing internally had changed within me, you know, nothing had changed, you know, I was still really, really frightened, if not more frightened, because I didn't have anything to numb it out, you know, so even more frightened, even more lost, really, but now I'm really pretending that I wasn't, so it's like 10 times worse, you know what I mean, so like, when I'm drinking and using and not needing to pretend that I'm getting it right, it's not so bad, you know, but this was like clean, sober, and that lost feeling come back. And it's just like, and I only knew one way. I was 3 years, so I only knew one way. You know, well, this is the thing. I knew two ways now, but I thought I only knew one way, which was to go and use. But luckily, I also knew that there was another way, and I ended up getting to a meeting. And I that night, I met a guy in the, and it was an AA meeting. And he offered to have me around his house a couple of days later for 3 days solid, and he'd show me Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was my experience, and that man showed me a lot of love in those 3 days, and you know, and didn't, you know, there was a bit of sprinkling of his opinion, but a lot of it was just like kind of like reading the book and kind of and getting an understanding, really. And what was missing, I think, was that I didn't really know what was expected of me, by me, or at that point, really, kind of, God really hadn't even come into the, you know, I've got a higher power in them days. I've got higher power, and I've got higher power through people pleasing. That's basically what I've done. So I came in, everyone else had a higher power. So I thought, I better fucking get one of them. Yeah. So I kind of like just got one and told everyone, I've got higher power. And they were like, sweet. you know, and it was a bit like that. It was just a transaction. It was just like, I got higher power. I've got, you know, the biggest thing about higher power back then was, oh, have you got an issue? I go, no issue. No, fully believe. Yeah, I'm all right with it. And that was the end of the story. And it was kind of, so there wasn't any transaction there. Conscious contact was just a set of words that kind of like sounded pretty cool, but I didn't understand what it meant. And so I was really missing that. And I think this man just showed me that what I needed was to understand kind of the spiritual nature of not only my illness, but obviously to kind of investigate a spiritual life, you know, and to kind of investigate what that means for me, and kind of, and that lied, and he showed me this. He's kind of lied behind, like, you know, from the point of view of Alcoholics Anonymous or Cocaine Anonymous, you know, there's principles that lie behind those steps, and that's a good place to start, you know. And he started to show me that there was kind of, you know, he said, I remember him saying to me, you know, like, what did your mum teach her? And I was like, you know, and we looked at like two or three things that my mum taught me when I was a kid, you know, like share your toys, you know, be nice to the, you know, be nice to whoever you come across. You know, don't lie, be honest if you can, you know. And it's like, well, you know, let's start with them three for a start. I mean, there's a lifetime's work for an addict. I don't know about anyone else, but it kind of, you know, it's not that complicated, you know. And 20 years on, and I remain to keep searching because I like to understand it better and better. And it's not about understanding it to avoid it, because I see a lot of people doing that. And I think that happens with the big book as well. It's kind of, we find that when it's very easy to stay in the big book as opposed to kind of practice the principles that lie in the big book and take it outside of yourself, you know. And I see that, and I see it a lot, you know. And so this man was like, listen, you know, this is the right use of the will. He'd just start pointing stuff out in the book that doesn't really get heard that much in meetings. And he would just say to me, listen, this is the, you know, the God doesn't want your will. Yeah. What he wants you to do is learn what his is and go out and practice. You know, and he really was the sort of man who sort of like, he took the shackles off for me. You know, he really took the shackles off, and he started to kind of really allow me to embrace life. And that was when I really started to step in, you know, and I took risks, like I'd take a new job, or, you know, I'd get into a relationship knowing that it wasn't going to be the end of the world if it didn't go right. You know, I'd sort of done stuff that was sometimes perceived when I listened in meetings as quite, you know, quite dogmatic, you know, just you be careful. Don't get in a relationship for the first year. Don't do this, you know. Stay in your lane is the new expression. And it's like, no, fuck off. I don't want to stay in my lane. Yeah. God's given me a life to live. And, you know, I've been told that I'm, there's a bit in the big book, it talks about our thought life, you know. And I think to myself, when I read that, I think to myself, the thought life, that there's talking about my thinking, you know, and it's talking about like a thought life. Like if I put that into the same context as a physical life, it's like my physical life is massive. So my thought life must be just as big. Yet I can hear messages that it's like, I can't trust my thinking. Don't trust your thinking. You know, and I really get it for early on in recovery. It's really important. And it was the same as me. Like 12-step as a container, the big book as a container really holds me. And it's really important that it holds me. It's really important that I learn. You know, when I came in at 24 years old, I had nothing. I had no life experiences. All I had behind me was trauma and tragedy of like my illness and what it took me. So really, I was born into this fellowship. I was born into this process. And it's like, and that container the 12-step gives me is really important for me. And it really held me. But there was a time when I got to step off the container, and I've got to kind of like try to practice what the principles. When it talks about practicing the principles in all our affairs, my mind in the early days would initially always go to, right, I'm not allowed to lie in any area of my life. Like, that's what it meant to me. That's what that when someone, and it's like, that's not what it always means. It means I've got to go and practice these principles. So these principles it's taught me, I've got to go into life and give life a go with these principles at my disposal. Not worry about whether I'm meeting people's expectations, because there's only one person that can judge me, and that's God. Yeah, and there's a massive part of that resides in me. It's like that conscious contact I understand now is just my gut. It's my gut. You know, and it's my intuition, it's my ability to know right from wrong. When the big book quite clearly told me, I couldn't differentiate it. So when I came here, I couldn't differentiate it. I didn't know what right and wrong was. I didn't know what true and false was. I didn't know what up and down was. I didn't know what black and white was. And I have to sometimes, you know, it's really important. I have to step into those grey areas. I have to step into kind of like really trying to practice in those middle grounds to find out what it is. And I understand that, like, you know, and I've touched on it, you know, as a newcomer, the container, the people, the fellowship, the meetings, it's such a brilliant breathing ground for life. And I will never forget, and I'll continue to practice it. And like Tom, I try and help where I can and try and quietly go about my business and kind of, you know, and give back where it's possible. But I don't believe Bill Wilson and the First 100 ever expected me not to live a life once I'd kind of really started to embrace this stuff. You know, it's kind of, people are going to meetings and people go, you know, you're going to get a life beyond your wildest dreams. And I went and got one, and then they were like, where the fuck have you been? And I'm like, I've been living that life beyond my wildest dreams you all told me I was allowed to have. You know, and it's like, and there's a balance there. You know, I've got to find a balance. So there's been times, I remember being like 13, 14 years of just not going to meetings. You know, and like, there's times when it happens. There's times when there's going to be darkness. There's times when there's going to be loads of light. There's times when it's going to be, I'm going to be in love with meetings. There's going to be times when I'm not, you know, but this ain't about any of that external stuff. It's about God. It's about God. It's about connection with my creator. And it's like, that's the bit. You know, and I was thinking about this the other day, and I thought to myself, you know, a lot of people say like 12-step introduced me to God. And it's like, that's not my experience. My experience is that drugs introduced me to God. You know, I wouldn't have had to seek him out in the way that I've needed to seek him out if it wasn't for my addiction. And I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for that opportunity. I'm so grateful to being what Tom, I think, was alluding to, which is to be kind of chosen for this life. And I don't take it lightly. I really don't take it. I wear it lightly. Yeah. And I don't take myself too seriously. But I really honour that. I really honour the fact that I've been given this opportunity, you know, and I've made some fuck. You know, anyone who knows me, there's only a couple on here, I think, because I've had a little scroll. I've had a little look, make sure there ain't too many people who know me. But for the ones that do, you know, it's like I've made some fucking howlers, honestly. I've practiced these principles and fallen over and grazed my knees more times than I've got it right. And it's all right. It's all right. And I understand that we live with a deadly illness. I really do. And some people think that I take that for granted or that I don't give it the credit it's due. And that's not it. I understand it. I do truly understand it. You know, but again, I try not to get in too much. It's really easy for us to dramatize this stuff. You know, my bestest friend from the age of 6 died of this illness in 2014. So I have every right to say, yeah, which is like, we have this thing, which is like we're living with a deadly illness. And yes, we are. Yes, we are. Yeah. But you know what causes me more like upset? Yeah. Is the ones that go out and come back and go out and come back and go out and come back. You know, because although people die from this illness, there's much more of that going on. There's much more of that going on. You know, people living with a daily misery of this illness. Yeah. Then there is people dropping dead from it. You know, and it's like they're the ones that I, you know, that's where I feel so lucky. I feel so lucky for this stuff, you know. And yeah, I don't know how much time I got, Chris, because you know me, I'm worse than Tom. I've got 8 minutes left. 5 minutes, 8 minutes. Okay. Yeah, so kind of. I haven't really got anything else to say. So shouldn't have stopped myself, should I? I'm going to finish. I've got 8 minutes. I'm going to say this. I'm going to share something that's kind of really close to my heart and is really pertinent for tonight. So Tom's mentioned me and I mentioned Tom in the share and we've been fellowship friends for like over 20 years. Yeah. And yet for 18 of those, all that really we had in common was the fact that, like, one of his sponsors had come to me and go, oh, fucking hell, can you help me out? I can't deal with him anymore. And the reverse would happen. So he'd have people come to me and go, oh, that fucking Dan, I can't be sponsored by him anymore. Will you give me a hand? You know, and it's like, and yet and there was no real relationship. You know, we'd see each other at meetings, we'd give each other a hug, and that was it. And I was going through a really dark period in 2017, 2018, and someone, a mutual friend of mine, when I was asking around for a potential sponsor, someone who I could help me. Now, I wasn't worried about clean time. They didn't have to be cleaner than me. I just wanted someone that I could go and dump this stuff to that had been going on in my life, and like kind of get a clean slate and go deeper and to get closer to what needs. And I was fucked. You know what I mean? I'll be honest. I was in a bad way. And a mate of mine just went, "Why don't you ask Tom?" And my first reaction was like, "What? It seems like a bit of a weird concept." And before I knew it, I was on the phone. And whenever Tom used to pick the phone up to me, he'd always have like a quizzitive answer. He'd go, "Hello, Dan." Like, because we didn't really speak that often. And he went, "Hello, Dan." And I was just like, "Mate, will you help me?" And for some reason, it felt like intuitively, he knew why I was ringing. And I don't know why. I don't know whether someone grasped me up and told me I had a load of shit going on or not. I don't know. But anyway, he intuitively knew. And I'll forward wind the tape, yeah, and just say that the last 2.5 years, we've built this most beautiful friendship, you know, and he did nothing but just take me where I needed to go. It wasn't really that it was driven by kind of pages in a book. We did do a step 4 and 5 together. We did do some 8 and 9 work, you know, and we continue to kind of really kind of like, it's just a friendship, but I just never, ever would have dreamed that would ever happen. You know, and Tom will admit, right, we've got these kind of like, we're kind of like different people. We come from different backgrounds. We're very different, our using expressions, but we're also quite different now. And it's funny because like, he ain't the overly spontaneous person. And I'd ring up and go, it might be 4 o'clock on a Tuesday night. And I go, "All right, you're at home?" And he go, "Yeah." I go, "All right, brilliant. I'll come around with dinner." And it freaks him out because he thinks, "Fucking hell, what's that all about? I can't, you know." So, and it's like, there's this beautiful finger. And he obviously is a, I would put him in the class of like one of my greatest spiritual teachers. Like, he has been amazing for me. Do you know what I mean? He's intellectually understands stuff. He shares stuff with you. He's a great listener. And he kind of really, truly believes in my spirit. And I would never have thought that happened. You know, that would never have happened. I waited 18 years. For a relationship like that in recovery, you know, and it's a beautiful thing, man, you know, and you never know what's around the corner. You never know who's going to be your kind of, you know what I mean? You just don't know. You just don't know. And it's all about, you know, I used to fucking hate the same, but people say like, you know, don't leave till the miracle happens. And that's the miracle. That is a miracle, you know? And something that I really, really cherish, and we've become really good friends That's all possible when you come here, you know, it's all possible. And I would say if you're new on this meeting, if you are a newcomer or someone that's new around, or you're struggling, or there's just a disconnect between, you know, and this year's not been easy, but if there's a disconnect between you and fellowship, or you and having people in your life that you know you can trust in, you know, be brave, you know, and realize that this is your life. This is it, you know, and I truly believe that if you pray and you ask and you wish for things to be better, you will manifest that stuff. God will provide for us, you know. And Tom touched on it really early on in his share. It's, you know, my thinking can change, and a lot of my thinking produces some of my, you know, a lot of my action today. And a lot of my action today is good, you know, and that comes from more positive thinking. So I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to say thanks very much to Central District for inviting me. I love you all. Have a merry, 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 merry Christmas. If you don't enjoy Christmas, just fucking stay safe. In about 5 days' time, it'll all be over. Yeah, and we'll go back to normal. So, you know, whichever camp you're in, just stay safe and stay clean, and, yeah, get connected. Thanks. God bless you all.